Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to author G.D. Grace's A Touch of Grace, Literary Magic, on Blog Talk Radio.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. Ooh, and I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on the tree, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me, and I'm feeling good. Dragonfly out in the sun, you know what I mean, don't you know? Butterflies all having fun, you know what I mean. Sleep in peace when day is done, that's what I mean. And this old world is a new world, and a bold world for me. When you shine, you know how I feel. Send out the pine, you know how I feel. Oh, freedom is mine, and I know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me.
I say you got to love technology. I don't think that all those beats will be heard on the recorded broadcast, but that was Nina Simone, Feeling Good. And there's so much emotion in that song, and you just know that there is a rich story behind it. And, of course, Nina passed on a few years ago, but her memorable music remains. So before diving into today's show, here's a little touch of grace. When the fire of ambition attaches itself to the core of our passion, it races through us like summer lightning, striking desolate areas, forever reigniting our life. How we respond to the flames determines the path we will walk and the mountains we will climb. People of the world, I am your host, GD. Welcome to iArtist Presents on the Touch of Grace. Today's date is April 28, 2014, and the time is 1:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I cannot believe that we're almost halfway through the year, and this is just how time flies. So today, we have a very special guest today. J. Alex Blaine is an author whose debut novel, Where We Left Off, is his first break into the world of literary. It is a fiction romance suspense novel, and it won't be his last. He is currently working on both the second and third novels to the series. He is a multimedia developer by trade, and one review quotes, "He is a talented man whose creativity is exceptional." And this was Katrina Coleman in an Amazon review. Residing in Bear, Delaware, with his wife and two children, he joins us today to discuss his life with words, paragraphs, and pages. And I welcome him to A Touch of Grace. Welcome to the show, Jay. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
You know what? I'm fighting a little cold, but you know what? I'm here, and it's all about you today, man. All about you.
But you know what? You can't help feel good after an intro like that. I mean, that song definitely it puts you in a certain mood in a certain zone.
All right. So you know about Nina Simone, huh?
Just a little bit, a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? And I have to tell you, and this is so shameful, George Michael actually sang this song, and it was some type of cable show, and I loved it. I'm like, God, I love that song. And I have to always remember that if a song is that good, it probably came from a previous era, and it did.
Absolutely.
And that's when I, you know, that's when I found out that Nina did it. So you know, and I felt like it was appropriate to start the show off with, because the title of your book, Where We Left Off, I just can't wait to dive into the interview. So how do the reviews touch your spirit? Like Katrina, and there are countless others that have commented on your abilities as a writer. How do those hit you?
I think the reviews are very rewarding in that, you know, once you complete a novel and you put all of your heart and soul into it, you want people to receive it the way you've put out, or at least receive it in the same spirit that you put into writing it. So receiving reviews like Katrina Coleman and other readers in regards to them liking the story, their ability to relate to the characters and the story itself, it just makes me feel really good. You know, in that same sense, you also have to look at the reviews that are not as favorable. And
right.
Those tend to be a little harder, especially for new authors, because it can kind of put you in the mindset of, you know, am I really good enough? Is my work good enough? And regardless of how many, I think, reviews that I get sometimes, I'll tend to focus on a 1 or 2 star review, and that may be 1 out of 50. But, you know, I take it to heart in that I let it help me for the next thing, because constructive criticism is good. You know, it helps to develop as a writer, and it just helps you along the way. So both good and bad, you know, I take them both and I apply them the best way I can.
Yeah, you know, and what you just described is humility, you know.
Absolutely.
It is, you know, because there's a certain arrogance some people have as writers, thinking, oh, this is the, you know, the next great epic novel. And in reality, you know, especially if you're just starting out, very few people actually hit it right on the head when they first start. But the ability to reemerge after getting, like you said, a 1 or 2 star review determines the character, you know, and it and it only makes you better if you really look at it. So I want to dive into your youth, and so that we will get to know you a little better. So what were the earlier years of life like for you, being a budding writer?
The earlier years, I would go as far back as maybe, I would say, elementary and middle school. That's probably the time I remember the most. You know, anything before that is kind of a blur. But it was a lot of fun growing up. You know, I grew up in a home with a single parent, so, of course, there were a lot of challenges and, you know, schoolwork and work in general. I think I started my first job when I was about 15. So I kind of grew up a little quickly in the sense of I had to understand responsibility and understand how to help people, more specifically helping my mother. She was raising me and my twin sister. And doing that, I kind of gravitated towards writing because it was an outlet. I think I remember, and it's funny, this actually went into my elementary years. I was about 9, and I was sitting against the refrigerator in my grandmother's house, and I was reading the Bible, and I really, really loved the stories in the Bible, how well they were worded, how well they were constructed. And I said, you know what, I'm going to rewrite this. So I took out a notepad, and I'm pulling verses from Genesis and John and all the different books of the Bible. And my mother said, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm rewriting the Bible. And she laughed hysterically and said, you cannot do that. You know, and then I didn't understand copyright infringement, but it was just she just basically said, you can't rewrite the Bible because it's already written. So once I grasped that, I started saying, well, let me just write my own stories. And, you know, that was kind of how I grew up. My mother didn't shoot me down with everything. She didn't make it seem like it was a bad thing. She laughed at some things, and, you know, she just supported me through any and every possible venture and idea that I had. And I didn't rewrite the Bible, but I did write a few stories when I was younger that kind of helped develop me into the way I am today.
How old, you know what, I love doing these shows. I love talking to talented, creative people. And here's another first. You sat down to actually rewrite the Bible. How old were you, Jay, at that time?
I had to be between 7 and 10, because I remember my grandmother passed away when I was 10, and it was before that, because they had a nice little chuckle about it. I had to be between 7 and 10 years old when I sat down to write, and it was, you know, my mother still laughs at it to this day, between that and other stories that I've written that she just can't stop laughing about. But, I was very young. I just really loved it seemed poetic to me. You know, some of the stories in the Bible, it just seemed very rich and poetic, and I took that to heart.
Yeah, have you ever gotten through the entire Bible? Have you had an opportunity to read the entire thing?
Many, many years ago. And the only reason I think I went through the whole Bible at that point, I was helping a church draft a ministry booklet, which required a lot of detailed information from every single book of the Bible. Ask me if I remember anything right now, I'm probably going to say no. But, you know, that was the only time I had to go on through every single book of the Bible, pulling out key verses and key scriptures and things of that nature.
Oh, that is so interesting, very intriguing. So you were drafting a ministry booklet for the church. So do you remember having gone through that? Like you said, it's a lot to remember. Is there a favorite part of the Bible that you like? Is it Psalms? Is it, you know, it has a lot of parables in there. So is there one particular area of the Bible that you gravitated to and took away with you and carry with you to this day?
Psalms and Proverbs, I tended more to, gravitate more towards those books of the Bible. I really liked the book of Samuel. For some reason, I love the story in it. So between, you know, Samuel, Psalms, and Proverbs, those were the three that I really, really gravitated towards, especially growing up and going through different trials and different hardships. I kind of gravitated, of course, more towards Psalms. You know, that kind of helped me through. But the key parts of that was knowing where to go. And I think growing up and going through, being raised in the church and growing through the Bible, it really helped me when I faced a tough situation to say, okay, what do I do now? I knew exactly where to go. I found exactly what I needed. And, you know, I can credit that to, you know, the life that I had growing up.
So I chuckle when you said that your mom and your grandmother chuckled. Here you are, 7 or 10 years old, you know, trying to rewrite the Bible. So early on in life, you know, your ambitions were pretty, pretty tall. So I have a question about the twin experience. So you have a twin sister. Are you guys identical twins, or?
Oh God, no. My sister. No. We're fraternal. It's my twin sister. I'm 2 minutes older. So I hold that torch, and she hates every time I bring it up when I have to pull rank on her. But
Yeah. So I'm wondering, and this is, I'm just curious. I think it's so cool to have a twin. And so is it true that you guys feel certain things at the same time? Have you ever experienced that before?
You know, it's funny because I have, and this was again a long time ago. I was away at camp in middle school, and it was really, really, the weather was horrible. I think there was some kind of tornado watch or something going on. But all of us were running back to the campsite, and I was probably the last one, but I heard someone scream really loud. So I turn around, and I'm looking, and there's nobody there, so I just figured, you know, it came from a distant cabin or something. So when I finally got home, my mom told me that, because we were still in the same area for the most part, so the same storm that I was experiencing there, they were experiencing at home, and my sister was really scared. And she said she screamed and she was crying, and I'm saying, well, when did this happen? And she kind of told me when it happened. I assumed it was around the same time because the feeling that I had when I heard that scream was like, I have to run and help. It was very internal. So I think that was that twin connection, but I could be wrong. But I know my sister, we can feel when each other is upset, whether we're close or traveling or anything of that nature. So that's one thing we do have, that twin intuition.
Yeah, that's what you call it, twin intuition. I think that, Captain, I just always wondered what that would be like. I always wanted a twin. So let's go ahead and move a little later in life, where you studied at Wilmington University. Where is Wilmington, and what degree did you walk away with?
Well, Wilmington University is in Newcastle, Delaware. It's one of the largest growing universities in this area. And I graduated with my undergraduate degree in communications and multimedia design. Then I continued for my graduate degree in information systems technology. So I carried both of those. And funny thing is, I also work at the university. So I like to tell people I kind of grew up here at the university. I started right out of high school and, you know, was blessed and fortunate enough to be offered a full-time position out of being a work study. And I was 21 years old, offered a salary position with great benefits, and I stayed put.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been very rewarding.
And so you're still at Wilmington to this day?
To this day, yes.
Wow.
So I've been here almost 12 years.
Mm-hmm. And what is your position at Wilmington?
Well, right now I'm a career counselor. And an admissions associate. So I assist with helping students find jobs, career development, professional development, as well as enrolling into the university.
Mm-hmm. And so, wow, that has got to be a very rich experience for you because you get a chance to see, like, waves of kids, you know, as soon as they graduate, mm-hmm. you know, and they come in there. And so what do you like most about what you do?
I think the one thing I like the most about it is because I started here as a student, I'm able to, you know, really relate to some of the students who come into the university. The thing that we have to remember is students come from different backgrounds. They come from different experiences, and college can be very scary for a lot of people. So being able to relate to them because my high school, I wasn't the best student. I was a good student, but I wasn't the best student. So being able to relate with another, you know, kid coming into the university who's afraid because they didn't do that great in high school and they're afraid that their attitude in high school is going to roll over into college, me having that experience and being able to tell them, listen, I graduated. I work here. I've taken the same steps that you're taking now, and you can do it. That's kind of one of the most rewarding aspects about working here at the university.
That is fantastic. I got a chance to work at Stanford University for a couple of years, and I would have probably still been there because the salary was good, the benefits were good, but needless to say, that's a whole other different story. But I remember, you know, admissions and all of the activities surrounding making a new student feel comfortable, and then you have the they call them helicopter parents, where they hover over their kids. They had, you've heard that term before?
Oh, yes. We still have them.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's almost like, okay, you know, they're grown. You know, you got to let go and let them do their thing. So what was your, I want to ask one more question about college. What was your college experience like when you were a student?
My college experience was probably a little different than most because Wilmington University is a commuter school. So we don't have dorms on campus, which meant by this time I was, of course, out of my house. So I had my own apartment, again, kind of forced to really grow up a little bit. So the experience in itself, it was scary at first. You know, my first year, and I'm not ashamed to tell anyone, I failed my entire first year of college. I wasn't prepared. I was scared. I was nervous. There were a lot of things going on. My financial aid wasn't, you know, set up correctly. But I came back, and I re-enrolled, and I just, you know, dedicated time and myself to getting my studies done. So it was tough in the beginning. But, you know, as I kind of allowed myself to go through the process and remove the fear and barriers, I think I was pretty successful in it.
Just from the start of this interview till now, you just continue to see and hear just how resilient you are. You just keep on moving forward, and that says a lot about your character. And so let's talk about your multimedia developer experience. What does a multimedia developer do?
We do anything graphic media related, and that comes down to graphic design, web design, video design and production, coding, photography, pretty much everything that you could possibly need for marketing and promotions, things of that nature. Very busy field. That was my dream job as far as where I wanted to work. My vision when I started this major was to move to New York or California, work in a marketing firm, and just really love what I'm doing. And with the downturn of the economy, I think, and also I was hired at the university, and by then, I'm a stay-put kind of guy. If something's really going well, I make the most out of it. And I'm glad I did. Things worked out perfectly because a lot of the jobs in that field went from being full-time positions to contract work or, part-time positions, not paying a full salary or having the benefits and everything. But the multimedia developer is a very creative outlet. You know, I've had clients in different I've had a number of different clients that I work with from Alaska to Utah, New York, California, all across the country that I've done work for. And it's been a lot of fun. It's definitely been a lot of fun.
It sounds like fun. So when you talk about graphic design, web design, this probably is going to answer my next question. But I've been to your website, as I talked to you right before the show started. It's beautiful. So are you the person that designed that?
Yes. Yes, I design my website, all of my graphics, anything that I pretty much need for promotions and things of that nature, I go ahead and do myself, which is, you know, I'm really blessed to have that skill set because that is one of the most expensive and difficult pieces, I think, with indie authors and packaging their product. And I think having that skill set definitely, it helped. It helped. And, you know, I don't hesitate to extend that service to authors that I come across that need the assistance. I don't mind because someone has helped me along the way, and I help others along the way. So if I know someone needs, and I had one friend who had written a book also, and she sent me her cover and said, this is what I'm putting out. I'm really excited. I'm finished my book. And I looked at her and said, you are not putting this out. Because her cover in no way reflected what I know was in the book. It didn't reflect her as an author. It didn't reflect the content in the pages. So I sat down with her, and I did her book cover over, her website, and just did everything for her because I know that's what she would need to kind of move forward, and that's the same thing, you know, that I kind of did for myself is I just try to package it and use the skill sets that I have to do it.
Okay, that sounds fantastic. So what program do you use when you're designing a graphic for a book cover?
Adobe Photoshop, Illustrator. I'm heavy into Photoshop. But, you know, there's a lot of different programs you can use from Illustrator to InDesign that most designers will kind of play around with. But I'm heavy into Photoshop, and that's one of my specialties. So that's what I use for the most part.
All right. And so what I always wonder, too, is, okay, so you have a website. And see, I have a blog site. It's on WordPress. So what are the differences and what are the benefits to actually having a quote-unquote website?
Well, the website kind of serves, that's the what could be the first method of contact, the first image. That's your brand. As a writer, when someone's looking for you, what I try to do is when you put my name in Google, I try to make sure everything that popped up was in line with what I was doing. And I felt the website is the best way to be able to get any information that I have across, any events that I have. It's kind of my portfolio. The difference with a blog, I can integrate a blog into the website, because the best thing about the websites that I do now and even my own is I build them on top of a WordPress platform, which means the same backend that you have for your blog is very similar to the same backend I have for the website. It makes it a lot easier for anyone to go in and edit. They don't have to have web experience. They don't have to have coding experience. Once it's set up, if they want to add a page, they hit page, add page. You know, it's kind of that simple. So I build on top of WordPress, primarily because it's a lot less work in regards to maintaining the site. And
Stanford University used WordPress. I stumbled across WordPress, and I always wondered what is the benefit, because right now I just have the free thing, and I've got tons of space left within that thing. But when I look at the website, your website is gorgeous. It's from the colors to the images that you have on there. So I want to move into the book, where we left off. So can you tell us a little bit about where we left off? And by the way, thank you for explaining that about the graphics and the website and the difference between the two.
No problem.
Okay. So where we left off, can you tell us a little bit about it and what we can expect when we open the pages of the book?
Sure can. Where we left off, it's a story that I like to tell. I like to say it is inspired based on true events. It is not a 100% true story when you say inspired by true events. It's kind of going on the notion of, I think every fiction author writes from some version of a truth, and every story is based on something you may have experienced or someone you know or something that you're going through or going through. But where we left off, it tells a story of primarily two individuals. Mason Everett, he's the main character, and the interesting thing about him, which may relate to a lot of people, especially if you've been to college and know the one guy who decides he doesn't want a relationship but wants to kind of play the field a little bit, that's Mason. That's Mason. The difference with him, he and his brother are owners of a very successful real estate development firm here in Delaware. And unlike his brother, who was actually married, he decides he doesn't want to go that route. And he just, he does his thing. But like every case, there's always a wonderful woman who comes along and changes everything. And for him, it was Sydney McHale, who he met at his brother's wedding. So with that, he didn't really want to go heavy into relationships. He kind of figured that he would, play his normal cards and it would end the same way every other interaction he's had with every woman ended. But she wasn't that type of girl. And she had a different set of morals and a different view of what she wanted. And what you find going out through the story is the more he starts to really open himself up to her, which is something that he never did for anyone in his, adult life, secrets from his past start to come up. Things that actually made him the way he was, things that kind of made him against relationships start to come up. And he pushes her away. He kind of figures that, the only way to get out of this is to leave the situation. But in doing that, he actually ends up getting into a really bad accident. Throughout this process, she never goes anywhere. So she stays by his side, but in doing that also, she finds out the things he tried to keep hidden. And out of that story, she's now kind of faced with, what do I do now? How do I take this information? How does this change things? Does it change things? And throughout the story, what I can guarantee through the pages is you will not expect what's about to happen. The story takes a lot of twists and turns. And it's guaranteed to keep you up at night.
I like it. I was sitting up there going, okay. I want to know what the secrets from the past are. I like how the pace of it, in hearing you talk about it, it's like, they start unveiling, revealing themselves as the relationship grows, and his decision to kind of, I don't want them to know what's going on. They step out of it, or try to get out of the path of those secrets being revealed. I think that is intriguing. So, what drew you into writing this particular story? Like you said, you were talking about a little earlier, inspired by true events. So, did you have the whole story in your head before you actually sat down and started writing, or did it unfold as you were moving through each chapter?
I had the beginning and the end of the story in my head. It was actually back in 2004.
Uh-huh.
2004 is when I kind of had the idea that led to the story. And I knew how it was going to start. I knew how it was going to end. Now, keep in mind, in 2004, I was probably, how old was I? I think 21 or 22 in 2004. Uh-huh. So my maturity level and understanding how things actually went weren't as current or accurate as they are today. Uh-huh. So, you know, once the story began, I sat down in 2004, I wrote a paragraph, and that was it. I didn't touch it again until 2011. Uh-huh. That was when I actually sat back down to touch, but it was a story that never left. And when I say inspired by true events, throughout my teenage years and coming out of high school, I had experienced a lot from moving out of my mother's house and in different places. And in doing that, I think when I finally got out on my own, I woke up one morning and I felt like, and if I can, if this makes any sense, I felt like I was a spectator in my own body. You know, as if I was looking through my eyes, but I was in a deep, dark cave. And I couldn't, I can see everything was happening, but I couldn't control it. I couldn't feel it. I couldn't make sense of it. And from that, I said, what if this were real? And I kind of sat down and drafted up this plot and the storyline. A lot of it's changed since 2004, but the basis of it still stayed there. And everything that developed through the story is so rich and, I think, authentic in the way that it tells a story of a relationship that may end good or bad. You know, I can't, you know, give you any spoilers.
Don't do that.
You know, the best part about it, I think, is it gives you the idea, or it brings to light, that every relationship isn't always good, or every relationship that ends good doesn't always go well, you know, throughout the process. It's not a fairy tale. It's not a boy meets girl, boy falls in love. Oh, they have an argument, they break up, they get back together. That's fairy tales. This this depiction of the relationship really goes through real-life situations of things that, you know, you never really ask when you date someone. You never ask, why do they do things a certain way? Why don't they, or why do they lock both locks? Why do they make sure I'm tucked in extra tight? Why do they make sure, you know, why do they do the things they do? And as you go through the story, it kind of comes out why Mason is the way he is, what made him the way he is, and how is that really affecting his ability to fall in love with Sydney.
Wow. So the question that I have for you, because, like I said, in knowing that in the beginning you would actually write, it's almost like an escape, single-parent household, and so you get to a point and you actually write the first paragraph in 2004, and then you're on this journey with this book. It sounds very rich and deep in emotion. So how did you, what zone did you get into to reach that emotional depth required for where we left off?
That is, it's kind of tough because I remember, and it's, I'll actually talk about one of the last chapters that I had written. Getting into the zone to write requires a lot. It requires you pulling yourself out of reality in a sense. You disconnect yourself from everything around you because you have to get into the character. You have to get into the feelings of the character, you know, the weather, the thought process. You have to get into all that. So for me, at times, I would listen to music, and my wife was sitting on one sofa, and I had my laptop up with my laptop stand and my feet up in the recliner, and I plugged in my earphones, and I put the song on. I said, I have to get this emotion. And I'm writing out this chapter, and I could not stop typing. It was the way the music was going, the way I zoned in. I'd written a chapter, and I start crying. And I stopped writing, and I pulled the headphones out of my ear, and I looked at my wife and said, I can't believe this is happening right now. And she looked at me, of course, like I was crazy. because I'm sitting there crying in front of a laptop for no apparent reason. But, you know, I had to get into that zone and that character. And being able to do that, I think, really displays well on the pages of a novel. And that's any novel, any writer. If you associate or connect with the feelings, if you're writing out of the feelings, it'll be read out of those same feelings.
Yes. Yes, you're absolutely right. I like how you explained that. And then also the putting of the headsets on or headphone on, listening to the music, because when I wrote my novels, music was just kind of, I could listen to a certain song now, remember where I was in the novel. So here you are, you know, you're deep into the emotion of writing where we left off. How long did it take for you to finish writing the book?
To finish writing, it honestly took me about 2.5 months. And that was really sitting down, setting aside the time, and just really focusing. During that time, which to this day I still think is, you know, I don't even know if I could repeat that process, but during that time I was taking 2 graduate classes towards a different degree. I was taking 2 graduate courses. I had actually taken the time to read 4 additional novels and write and re-edit and rewrite my novel all within that same time period.
Wow.
I have no idea how that happened.
That's
none
what I was
going to
ask. I'm like, I have to ask you, you were in a zone. You know, and to say that you were married at the time, tack that onto it, you know.
Yes.
And then you have your kids. Tack
yes.
that onto it.
Yes. It
okay.
takes a
so
very supportive wife.
Yeah. Yeah, I just have to ask. I'm like, my God, it was something that I saw. It was on one of the awards. It wasn't the Trumpet Awards on BET. I think it was, I can't think of it, but the photographer gets up, and as she's thanking everybody, and she thanks her friends and her family because she says that as artists, we can be very selfish with our time because when we're in our time, you know, that's when we do our creativity. So it takes a special type of person to be able to understand that and support that. So has your wife always ridden shotgun with you and just provided the support, or were there ever times when she said, look, I need my time with you?
She, you know what, she has. And I say that because we've had a lot of different experiences. I'm a very, I'm a guy who can't sit still. I'm always doing something. I'm always involved in a group or I'm involved in some kind of venture with friends. You know, when I started my graphic design company, she was right behind me. She would come in and look at something and say, I don't like that font. Knowing that if she says she doesn't like one thing, I'm going to change everything. But, you know, the relationship that she and I have, she knows the type of person that I am, and she knows the last thing, or she knows the one thing that will kind of shift things is if she does not show support. Because, and when I say that, I mean my passion to continue doing what I'm doing relies on her supporting me. The moment she doesn't support me is a very difficult time because that passion kind of dwindles because I feel like it's, I don't know if I'm explaining it the right way. Just
yeah,
her
you
support
are.
Is, you know, it's just needed. You know, if I don't have that support, then I can't continue on. But she's always been that way. You know, I've taken time. And at this time, I had 2 children that were both in diapers being potty trained.
Ooh.
That is...
you didn't add on diapers. I'm thinking that they're, like, at least walking. And
they were. It was a very tough time. But, you know, I would go upstairs or I would sit in the living room and she would take the kids up and they would say, Daddy, are you doing homework? Everything is homework when I pull out the computer. So I would say yes. And they would just go, and she would take them, and she just supported me 100% through everything. And to this day, you know, if I need to set aside time to write, she's like, go do it. Because, you know, being a writer and being in that creative zone, when it hits you, it hits you. Mm-hmm. When it doesn't, it doesn't. And, you know, I can be just laying down at 1 o'clock in the morning, and something will hit me, and she'll hear me scrounging around for a pen and some paper. But, you know, she's always been supportive. So I've really been blessed to, you know, to marry a woman like her.
And you know what? What's the blessing is that you understand that it's a blessing. And I got chill bumps. I mean, you're incredible. So let's talk about your graphic design company. What is the name of your graphic design company, and are you advertising for people to actually be able to hire you for your services?
Well, actually, I no longer operate the graphic design company in the sense of it being available to the public. It used to be called Exodus Concept, and I ran it for about 4 years with a really good friend of mine. His name is Sean Karn. We did a lot of graphic and photography work together. Right now, the way I kind of do it is on a referral basis because it's very time-consuming to do it, but I'm working with actually another author whose name is Tamika Kane. She's developing a different company that will assist authors and promoting and, you know, getting things packaged. And being able to do that with someone with the same mindset of helping people makes it a lot easier. Because you find in this field, you know, technically you can charge people a lot of money to get things done. You know, you can charge for a website $4,000 or $2,000. And people will pay that because that's literally a going rate for something like that. But I know as an independent author and as just a person right now and understanding that I have bills and other responsibilities, people don't have that kind of money. So working with another person to be able to curve all that cost and say, listen, we're willing to help to make sure your product and your package is right. It is professional. They won't be able to tell an independent author apart from an author that's published mainstream, because that's the one thing I think a lot of independent authors make, and I even started to make in the beginning, was once we're finished the book, we're done. We're happy, we're excited, we just want to slap a cover on it and let the world read it. But people judge by the cover. And your first impression is visual. So being able to help out with that is something that I'm really excited about. And, you know, authors contact me and they tell me what they need. And 9 times out of 10, if I can just help them right away, I'll just help them. Sometimes I charge, sometimes I don't. But I just feel like, you know, being a blessing to someone, it comes back. It definitely comes back.
Well, thank you for explaining that. Well, at least now I know who to go to. That's one thing I also really do treasure is, you know, building relationships with people. That's what I tell a lot of new people will hit me up, and they're just wanting to tap into the resources that I know. And I'm like, well, no, because I have a respect not only for the people who have been on the show, but, you know, there's a lot of work that you have to do to actually get your mind in a zone to actually be a scholar in the craft, as opposed to a catfish bottom dwelling just to try to lift yourself up, you know. And I honestly believe that when someone is operating that way, it's a turnoff to me, in all honesty. So it's just grateful. I'm grateful to have met you. You're definitely very brilliant when it comes to graphic design. So where was I going with that? I have no idea, but I just wanted to say that you're an amazing talent. You're a thinker. You're intellectual. And, again, the website looks fantastic, and I can't wait to read the book. So you are an indie self-published author.
Yes.
What drove your decision to self-publish? I think I have an idea, but in your own words, what you looked at the landscape of publishing, and what made you decide to just do it alone?
With that, I mean, of course, I think like any author, you want to be published to the extent of having your work represented everywhere in every distribution channel and everyone knowing and seeing. The industry is very tough.
The
publishing industry is extremely tough to break into. I mean, there's a lot of different steps that I would have to take and am still considering as far as getting an agent and, you know, going that route. But for this one, I just decided I wanted 100% of the direction of this novel. I mean, this was my baby. So with that, I just decided to do it all myself. I decided to do my own marketing, my own promotions, my own designing, build my own website, put everything together myself. It's a lot of work to do it that way, but it's very rewarding because at the end of the day, if I want to go in one direction, I just push it in that direction. I don't have to go through the other channels of contacting an agent, contacting this person, and doing that. But again, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to do it that way. But like you mentioned earlier, networking. Networking is probably one of the best things any independently published author can do, because what I found, especially in this area, and I live in Delaware, there are a lot of authors here in Delaware that are self-published, who were once self-published but are now published mainstream, that are willing to help. And that could be editing, that could be contacts, that could be events. When I first got started, I got in touch with one author, and she's actually she's an author. She writes young adult fantasy novels. Her name is Liz D'Asus. Got in touch with her, and she literally gave me every single contact she had. Contact. She even gave me a script. She said, when you call these places, this is what you say. If they say this, you say this. She said, I'm going to this place. I told them you were coming, call them. And, I mean, it was so much information, I couldn't even lay it all out, you know, right away and just get it. It was so much I had to bullet point and section. Okay, Monday I'm going to contact this. Tuesday I'm going to handle this. She just gave me everything. And that's how a lot of the authors are, believe it or not. So, you know, if anyone is considering writing, it's a benefit to network. And don't be afraid to approach an author, because we were all in the same place. We all started in the same exact place, the same position. We had an idea. We wanted to write about it, and we did it. And people are going to constantly be in that same position. So reach out to authors. I mean, for the most part, the ones that I know, the ones that I've ever come across, have always been very helpful, even if it's just an encouraging word. You know,
Speaking of helpful, I wanted to don't want the segment to end without giving a shout out to Elder Paulette. She has really been a support for this show. I mean, I've interviewed so many authors based on Paulette Harper's referral, you know, and when they come, they actually come correct, you know, and they really do, you know. I think it has a lot to do with that spiritual foundation and just the character of the person as well. Like you mentioned, you know, the importance of networking and how this woman, Liz D'Asus, just opened up her vault of contacts for you to kind of help you along. I think it's fantastic. So I want to touch bases a little bit more about this self-publishing. I self-published through a company, a pay-to-print company. It's called Lulu. And as a result of going there, and we won't even talk about my book covers because I have to go back and clone them. I just haven't did that yet because, like you said, people look at it doesn't represent what the content is in there. So Lulu is a pay-to-print company. So is there someone behind your distribution, or do you handle the distribution as well?
I handle it as well. I think CreateSpace and Lulu are kind of similar. That's who I go through is CreateSpace. So, you know, I pay per book, however many I want to order, and then from there, I just go to different places and I run events. Right now, Wilmington University actually had me speak for the National Library Week a few weeks ago. So, you know, with that, which was a huge, huge thing, especially for me, being able to speak with students and the community, just about writing about the novel, I was actually able to read a few excerpts. But back to that, the distribution part. So from that, I was the person who submitted an order for a certain amount of books, got those in, priced them, and they're now being sold in our university bookstore between here and Dover and a few other of our sites that we have throughout the East Coast. So and that's another part about, you know, being independently published. You handle all of that, and you have to be in the mindset because you're switching hats. You're moving from writer to your own agent, to your accountant, to your marketing person, to your PR person. You're wearing 50 million hats and just, you know, transitioning between those. For me, it's fun because I can't sit still. You know, I'm like a jumping jackrabbit. I'm always into something. but I think that's one of the beautiful things about being independently published is you get to experience a lot of different things on a lot of different levels that you will find to be very rewarding.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And I could tell that you really love it. I mean, the climate that's coming through the airwaves as you talk about this, you're very confident, you're very composed. Let's talk about copyright for a minute. Mm-hmm. So did you go through the National Library of Congress to actually do your copyright for your book?
Yes. Yep, I went through the National Library of Congress, and I also, I'm trying to remember what else I did. There's another, I cannot remember, there's another step to have your book actually in the Library of Congress.
Uh-huh.
And I went through that route also. Uh-huh. That, believe it or not, is a lot easier than people think.
Uh-huh.
You know, you submit a document electronically, it'll cost you about $35 to have it copywritten. The general rule is, the moment you sit down and write something, technically it's copywritten. That's the general rule because your computer actually stamps it. You don't see it, but your computer stamps everything that you do.
Is that amazing?
It's amazing, but I think I just feel more comfortable because it was a written piece of work that I knew I was going to publish and submit to thousands of people. I wanted it to have that legal copyright.
Exactly, most definitely.
So, you know, years ago, you used to be able to, and I think they call it the poor man's copyright, and I used to do it all the time. You would put it inside of an envelope, and you would mail it to yourself, and you would never open it. But that is no longer, if something ever were to happen where you would have to go to court, that copyright would no longer hold up in court. So that's why I kind of went the legal route. I mean, $35, you know, it's nothing. And I think another thing. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. So when you, I didn't mean to interrupt you. When you doing the $35 electronic document filing, so you have your entire manuscript, or do you just have like a couple of chapters?
Oh no, it's the entire manuscript.
Okay.
And then if you change it, you just resubmit it and just get a new copyright.
Okay.
Yeah, the moment I finished.
I want to congratulate you on the National Library Week at Wilmington and then also having your books at Wilmington. I mean, that says a lot about the caliber of a writer that you are. I think that's fantastic. So as we move into the final questions of the interview, for those who have called, I don't see anybody that has come into the switchboard, so that means that you're probably all listening, which is good, which is a cool thing. I have just had an intriguing conversation with the author of Where We Left Off. His name is J. Alex Swain. And so what we're going to do right now, I'm going to talk about some upcoming shows, and then we're going to come back to the final questions of the interview. So sit tight for just a second, Jay, and I'll get right back to you, okay?
Sounds good.
Okay, so tomorrow on the 29th, Chris Jasper of the Grammy Award-winning Hall of Fame inductee Isley Brothers will be joining me tomorrow to discuss life in the spotlight and just decades of music. And then on the 1st, which is Thursday, a filmmaker by the name of Kevin D. Rogers, also known as Kivo Desh, joins me. I met him over at Stage 32, which is an incredible platform for creatives, run and founded by RB. That's all I can think of his name right now. I got a little writer's block. Then on Friday, the 2nd of May, musical artist Kivo joins A Touch of Grace to talk about his life in music, and so it ought to be pretty interesting. So now I'm going to go back to the author of the hour. His name is J. Alex Blaine, author of the incredible book, Where We Left Off. So, Jay, what do you like about the entire writing process?
I like the ability to escape. Excuse me. I love the ability of creating characters and developing storylines and, you know, just moving through different phases of a person's life. I remember when I was writing Where We Left Off, I had written a few chapters, and I got so, I guess this is when I was in my zone, I had gotten so deep into the character until I went to work one day, and I was saying, I wonder what happened to so-and-so. And then I had to remember that person wasn't real. So I had to rush home and just really get into finishing that chapter in the story. But I think the best part of writing is the ability to create a whole separate world. I mean, you're literally building, and I use the example of, have you ever seen the movie The Matrix?
I sure have.
Okay. Do you remember in The Matrix when Morpheus first took Neo into the construct, and it was a completely all-white room.
Right, right.
That was, to me, that was the beginning of writing. And then as he moved through to show him what the Matrix was, you saw buildings start to come out of the ground, and cars start to move, and people start to show up, and conversations start to happen, and you saw so many things that started to happen. And I think when I write, that's the mindset that I get in. You start with a blank white slate, and little by little, you just start to build it. You start to build the city and build the people and build the relationships and build the kid who ran across the street who's really not significant to the story but significant to the storyline and the environment. You know, you start to do little things. And I really, really enjoyed that part of writing.
Yeah, I like how you explain stuff. And I actually saw the white room. I knew you were going to go there. It's like a blank slate. So I really did like that. So now the Matrix also has another meaning, a metaphoric meaning as of today. So you have a lot of scenes in the first book. So you're actually going to move into novel 2 and 3 of the same storyline. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
So
when can we expect
I'm looking, well, I had to set a date because if I didn't, I felt like I wouldn't push myself as hard. But I'm targeting October 18th, and actually a friend of mine gave me the date. Because I said, I'm going to do it in October, and she's another writer. She said, you need a day. And I said, well, the 31st. She said, no, October 18th sounds fantastic. So that kind of put some more fire underneath of me. My target is it's October 18th.
I like your friend. Yeah,
they know how
really
to keep you moving.
Well, of course they do. They believe in you. You know, you're certainly something special. So, for the fans, how can they reach you, and where can your books be purchased?
My books are available right now on Amazon.com in paperback and an ebook through Kindle. So it's Amazon.com, and they can just type in either Where We Left Off or J. Alex Blaine. And as far as contact, my website is jalexblaine.com, and that's just the letter J. AlexBlaine.com. They can find all the information there. I have a lot of different excerpts from the book and different reviews and contact method. And my email, jalexblaine@gmail.com. And I love emails. I love conversation. I love anything. I mean, I had one reader who just sent me an email that said, I really loved your book and gave me a lot of different feelings that she had towards reading it. And I will take the time to respond because at the end of the day, we write a novel, but we give it to every reader out there who takes the time out of their busy schedule to sit down and read it, and that means a lot to me. If you take the time to add to that by sending me an email just saying I read your novel, I'm very appreciative, and I like striking up conversations because, again, that's part of networking. You know, my readers are important to me, and I really appreciate them just allowing me to share some of their time when they read my novel.
All right. Well, I think you're an incredible creative, but even more so, I think you're an incredible human being, and the literary world is that much more because of authors like you in it who are so giving and kind and genuine. And I just wish you all the success in the world. When that next novel comes out, just hit me up at Author G.D. Grace. Let me try this again. AuthorGDGrace@gmail.com. I'm telling you, I can't believe I got through this interview feeling the way I do, but it's AuthorGDGrace@gmail.com. Hit me up, and we'll make another show happen because A Touch of Grace definitely wants to be part of your growth and your success, Jay.
Oh, that is fantastic. I definitely will. I'm pretty sure I'll be working very closely with Paulette. She's a phenomenal, phenomenal woman who's kind of helped me get everything up and running for this tour. So we will definitely be in touch.
All right, that sounds good. And one last question. The book signing events, are there any schedules?
I pretty much cleared my schedule for summer. I'm trying to really dedicate that to writing. But the next event that I'm scheduled to attend is the Black Authors and Reading Rock Weekend, October 17th through the 18th in Bowie, Maryland. That's the next event that I'll be attending. I have the information on my website, but if anyone is interested, it's the Black Authors and Reading Rock Weekend, Bowie, Maryland.
All right, that sounds fantastic. Well, I know that you're going to be a smash at the event, and in the meantime, I want to thank you for stopping by, and I'm going to let you go back to your afternoon, and thanks again for being on the show.
Oh, thank you very much, and I hope you feel better.
All right, thanks a lot, Jay. You take care.
Thanks, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we just had an incredible hour with Jay Alex Blaine. I love his composed delivery when he talks. You know that you can expect that when you get into his book, so I can't wait to get me a copy of that one. So on a final, I just want to just reference a quote by Dr. Maya Angelou. When someone shows you who they are the first time, believe it. Okay? It's a very short phrase, but it has a lot of meaning. And also, too, if you're out there trying to follow a dream, you can't wait for other people to push you. You have to have a drive within yourself that says, this is what I want to do. If you're surrounded by people who can't see your dream, don't be bitter about it. You know, the dream was given to you. So you follow it. You take it and you find that star and you go with it and become that comet that races across the midnight sky. And know this, GD loves you very much. Make sure you're loving yourself. You take care, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.